Hey guys, welcome back to Making a Dietitian. I'm your host, Cassie Blanford, and today we are going to be discussing mental health and your diet and how those two things are related. So just a warning, since we will be talking about mental health, you know, we will be talking about sensitive topics, so I guess this is like your trigger warning. It is briefly discussed, but overall, not much. But I just wanted to put that out there that we will be covering sensitive topics since this is about mental health and wellness. So, you know, again, we're going to be discussing how your diet and mental health are related. I'm first going to be discussing certain dietary choices that can affect your mental health. And then I'll go into detail about kind of like the gut-brain axis, which I will briefly discuss. I don't have a ton of knowledge on that, so I'm not going to try and discuss that any further than what I have researched. And then we will be going into specific mental disorders and diets and medical nutrition therapy that are recommended for those. So first, you should know that no one certain dietary component is going to improve your mental health. But really, it's the overall diet and eating habits that provide benefits due to a synergistic interaction between nutrients and the prevention of mental health disorders. I feel like that had like more than one large word in it. Basically, you know, everyone, like I even discussed in the last episode, everyone talks about like a magic food for your health and everything. There is no such thing. No such thing at all. Everyone is an individual. Everyone has, you know, a different gut microbiome. Everyone has different things going on, different needs. So everything is going to be individualized to you and what your body needs. So going into macronutrients, you know, your fatty acids are important. So those polyunsaturated fatty acids directly affect brain cells. That directly affect brain cells are DHA and EPA. DHA is key to ensuring neural membrane integrity, fluidity, and functioning. EPA is a precursor of anti-inflammatory cytokines. And hypothesized to positively modulate metabolic and immune processes. So also, on the other hand, your monounsaturated fatty acids have been shown to modulate brain activity and sleep behaviors. That's just saying, obviously, your unsaturated fatty acids are good for you, which I have discussed, you know. Going back to the macros podcast, those are going to be your, you know, liquid at room temperature oils. So your olive oil, canola oil, everything like that, that's going to have those unsaturated fatty acids in them. Amino acids and proteins derived from dietary intake have been shown to positively influence sleep quality and duration. The amino acids involved include tryptophan, glycine, and L-ornithine. That one is definitely not as common as the other ones. And duh, sleep is super important to your mental health. You know, if you have lack of sleep, you are going to be putting a lot of stress on your body, and stress is going to directly affect your mental health. It's just that simple, ladies and gentlemen, and everyone who doesn't identify with that. And then lastly, we have carbs. So while carbs are the brain's favorite source of energy, during depressive episodes, you may experience a heavy craving for carbs. I think a lot of people can attest to that. It's not uncommon. But unfortunately, simple sugars are shown to be associated with an acute inflammatory response that leads to poor hippocampal-related memory. On the other hand, you know, your complex carbs are going to have anti-inflammatory effects that can be transmitted to the brain. So obviously, as we've talked about, simple sugars aren't super great for you. That doesn't say you can't have like candy every now and then or white bread every now and then. But we really do want to be looking into those complex carbs, you know, because they're anti-inflammatory. They're good for you. They're not going to raise your glycemic index. Everything I've already said, just repeated again. So as for micronutrients, vitamin B may modulate cognitive performance, preserve memory during aging, and improve cerebral and cognitive function in elders. So take your vitamin B. Take it. Take it when you're young. Take it when you're old. You should be taking that vitamin B. So that, you know, you have all these awesome things going on for you. Vitamin D may prevent neurodegenerative disorders. Vitamin E is involved in protection of nervous membranes from oxidative damage. And many minerals have protective properties against oxidative stress. And like I just said, stress is not good for your body. It's not good for your mental health. Any of it. So I know personally, I've heard like a bit on the argument that like 90% of your serotonin in your body is found in the gut. I think a lot of that has just been on social media recently. So obviously if you're on social media, you've maybe heard that. So I did a little bit of research on the matter as well. And like I briefly said in the very beginning, there is a relationship between your gut and your brain cells called the gut-brain axis. So studies have found that the status of your gut microbiome have a direct effect on your body's ability to manage anxiety and depression. Like, shocker. So stress affects your body's gut microbiome, and those effects may influence anxiety and depressive-like behaviors. So that being said, it's a really good idea to be consuming things that aren't going to lead to stress and inflammation in your gut to avoid the increased chance of having those altered behaviors. And that is not to say like, oh, I'm eating bad and that's the cause of my anxiety, or oh, I'm eating bad and that's the cause of my depression. That's not what this is saying. Obviously, anxiety, depression, any mental disorder is multifactorial, and there is not going to be one set thing that is going to be causing these behaviors at all. And I mean, that is even said later on in this episode, but it is saying like, since it is multifactorial, it is possible that, you know, what you're consuming and the stress that you're putting on your body, depending on what you're eating, has some sway in your behaviors and your mental health. Not saying that, you know, we fix it and it's going to be gone. Not at all what I'm saying. It's just saying like, it can be part of it. It could be contributing. So a diet that, you know, would help would be adopting the DASH diet or something that's not high in omega-6 fatty acids. Those are your polyunsaturated fatty acids. You know, like I said, they lead to inflammation. Increasing your omega-3 fatty acids have the opposite effect. Having a diet high in fruits and veggies for phytochemicals and antioxidants, like, shocker. Wow, surprise, fruits and veggies. Who would have known? And then also a rate reduction if needed. Obviously, if not needed, then disregard that. I'm not here about to preach and give anyone, you know, any eating disorders or anything. Last thing I would ever want to do. But, you know, stress it. If you are overweight or have extra weight on your body, that can lead to stress on your body. And like I said, stress and everything else is going to lead to some contributing to disordered behaviors. So that was the short little introduction. And now I'm going to go into like specific disorders. I really am only going to cover anxiety, bipolar disorder, depression, and schizophrenia. That is what I had on hand for me. And I feel like those are pretty common. I know there are many, many other things. I know like anxiety is going, you know, well, I'll go into anxiety first. So anxiety is a blanket term, and it's used to describe numerous mental health disorders such as generalized anxiety, panic disorder, OCD, PTSD, and social anxiety. So those are all going to be encompassed in the anxiety discussion, instead of having their own little thing, since anxiety can be used as a blanket term for that. So anxiety originates in the amygdala. I felt like I stuttered with that all day. So yeah, which processes fear and then stimulates the brain to release norepinephrine, corticotropin releasing factor, and other excitatory components of the sympathetic nervous system. So anything that's going to trigger this kind of like response, I mean, it could be absolutely anything. It could be from, you know, life circumstances or experience. So with that PTSD, if you've gone through something traumatic, you know, that is going to affect the way that you're perceiving everything around you. It could also come just from stress that you have going on at work, stress that you have in school, stress in your home life or your relationship. You know, it could come from loss of sleep, hormonal imbalances, and bodily changes. So there are a ton of things that can affect anxiety, and you know, the mental health discussion is, I think it's becoming less stigmatized, but I think we still have a long way to go in terms of this. And also, I feel like mental health is often gatekept. Like, people are like, oh, you know, I can't have this because my life is so good, or I have nothing to stress about, so I have no right to say I have anxiety. Like, that is not at all how that works. And I don't want any of my listeners to be thinking that either. You know, it's so important to understand your body and understand what's happening and to be aware of how you're feeling. And if you're feeling a certain way, don't just like discredit that, because that sucks. Yeah, you can hear things in the back. So symptoms of anxiety include increased heart rate and respiration, hypervigilance, and sleep disorders. You know, obviously there can be a lot of other signs and symptoms of it, but those are just like really common ones. I know personally for me, I have anxiety and panic disorder. I can, like, the increased heart rate is right. Respiration, hyperventilating, definitely. Often can get like dizziness or like numbness. I think that's really common, especially when you're hyperventilating. And dissociation also. And everyone is going to be different. It's very individualized. So don't think that, oh, like, my symptoms don't fit into this, so I don't have that. Like, that's not how it works either. So the medical nutrition therapy that we recommend is to first check on micronutrient levels of vitamin D, magnesium, and your B vitamins, because supplementation of these in studies have shown like a decrease of anxiety symptoms once these have been supplemented. One that is often said to decrease is like if you decrease your caffeine intake. Awesome. Like, that has been shown to help with anxious symptoms. Because it does increase your heart rate and possibly induce anxiety. So two other recommendations are that are nutrient-related are to reduce the intake of sugars and then to increase the intake of high-quality protein. So complementary therapies that may be noted include doses of 200 milligrams a few times a day of theanine, doses of 100 to 500 milligrams a few times a day of passion flower extract, and then there's magnolia bark, lavender, inositol, and GABA. Those are just some other things that I know were mentioned. And I think a lot of those you can honestly find in like teas. So, you know, if you're a tea drinker, good for you. And then there's obviously medical treatments that may be taken for anxiety disorders, such as benzodiazepines, SSRIs, and norepinephrine reuptake inhibitors. I know I am personally on SSRIs, but, you know, they recommend different things for everyone. And, I mean, I know we're going to talk about this in the depression episode as well, but, like, if you are considering being put on medication, I think that is an awesome step. I hate how stigmatized it is to be put onto medication for anxiety and depression, and definitely shouldn't be that way. So if you feel the need for that, definitely talk to your doctor. Please talk to a doctor. Please get their advice. And also, not everything is going to work the first time. It is very much trial and error. There's not like one set right medication for someone who is suffering from anxiety and depression, because everyone is individualized and their body chemistry is different. So if something doesn't work for you at first, like, stick with, I mean, those first like 2 to 4 weeks are really rough when you start a new medication. But after that, if it's just not working for you, like, please, please talk to your doctor, like, get something fixed, try something else. One, don't suffer through it. And two, don't just like stop cold turkey, because that can really mess up everything as well. So next we have bipolar disorder. This is a disorder in which people experience episodes of elevated or agitated moods known as mania, alternating with episodes of depression. While there is a genetic component associated with the development of bipolar disorder, there are also hormones, neurotransmitter abnormalities, and stress that factor into the illness as well. So medications are used in the treatment of bipolar disorder, and lithium is a classic treatment, as well as mood stabilizers, benzodiazepines, and antipsychotics. Unfortunately, the lithium treatment comes with some issues, as the doses of treatment are close to those that are considered toxic. And if they do reach toxic levels, it can cause hypothyroidism, renal toxicity, and tremors. The medical nutrition therapy for bipolar disorder includes lithium and sodium. So a stable, moderate amount of salt intake is necessary to stabilize lithium levels. I just felt like that was important to note. And that was really like the biggest note that they had as far as medical nutrition therapy. There isn't a ton that we can do from a nutritional standpoint in terms of helping with bipolar disorder. But many people are going to experience weight gain from the lithium treatments, and a lot of times it's going to turn them away from taking this medication. Don't do that. Please don't do that. This is meant to help you, and weight gain is okay. It's totally okay. Other side effects include increased thirst, nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea, which sucks. And then some supplements that may help include fish oil, NAC, and magnesium, just as like, hey, these are pretty good. So getting into depression, this is the one I have the most information on. It is a multifactorial illness resulting from genetic, nutrition, environmental stressors, hormone disruption, specifically the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, and alterations in neurotransmitter biology and function. So a lot goes into depression, and it's not even like, I mean, it's kind of well understood, but there are just theories on why it develops and how it develops. So, you know, we don't even know everything about it. Obviously, each individual who's diagnosed with depression will have different circumstances related to their illness, and they should be treated that way as an individual. As far as the pathophysiology goes, depression is thought to occur when there is a monoamine deficiency, such as serotonin, dopamine, and norepinephrine, or an altered monoamine receptor function in the central nervous system. Also, a decrease in fish oil and omega-3s, as well as nutritional and hormonal factors, play a role in the development of depression. The diagnostic criteria for depression is as follows. So I'm going to talk about, you know, if you feel as though you are suffering from depression or may have depression, this is the diagnostic criteria that they use. Please do not self-diagnose, but also be aware that you can go to a doctor and they will ask you these questions, and it would be a really good thing for you to bring them up if you feel like that is important. So depressive mood or loss of interest or pleasure in daily activities for more than 2 weeks, mood representing a change from the person's baseline, impaired function, whether it's social, occupational, educational, any of that, and then there are going to be specific symptoms that you have every day, and to meet the criteria, you have to like meet 5 of 9 of these. So 1, depressive mood or irritable most of the day, nearly every day, as indicated by subjective report or observation. Decreased interest or pleasure in most activities most of each day. Significant weight change, that which is 5% or more, or change in appetite. Change in sleep, such as insomnia or hypersomnia. Changes in activity, psychomotor agitation or retardation. Fatigue or loss of energy. Guilt or worthlessness, feelings of worthlessness or excessive or inappropriate guilt. Concentration, so diminished ability to think or concentrate or be more indecisive. Then last, suicidality, thoughts of death or suicide, or even having a suicide plan. So those are going to be the diagnostic criteria for depression. And please talk to your doctor if you believe that you fit any of these, if you have any of these. I am not yet a medical professional, and even if I was, I am not going into this field specifically. So I do not know everything, and I do not have that much information, but there are definitely people out there who can help and will help, and you deserve to have help if you feel as though you fit into this category. So please do not hesitate to reach out to someone. In terms of depression, there are obviously numerous pharmacotherapies, but like I said earlier, they're inconsistently effective. So majority of individuals will not achieve full remission through pharmacotherapy practices. Common medications include selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, such as I wrote these down. I don't think I can pronounce them, but SSRIs. And then serotonin norepinephrine reuptake inhibitors, and then norepinephrine dopamine reuptake inhibitors. Those are going to be the classes of antidepressants that you can find. And then there's like older ones that aren't used as often, and those are going to be monoamine oxidase inhibitors and tricyclic. Antidepressants. Those are not as common, but I think that if like nothing else is working for you, they do start trying those. So the medical nutrition therapy for depression includes the supplementation of fish oils with a composition of 60% EPA and 40% DHA. I just got that at Walmart today. Thought I'd try it out. You know, why not? And then other supplements include curcumin, vitamin B complexes, and then magnesium and zinc. There's also other supplements that may assist, such as like St. John's wort, 5-HTP, tryptophan, and vitamin D. But, and huge but here, patients who are already taking medication and supplement with these may be at risk for triggering serotonin syndrome. I personally hadn't even heard of this until I looked it up. It's a result of too much serotonin in the brain causing increased heart rate, anxiety, sweating, twitching, and hyper-responsive reflexes. And then more severe symptoms are going to include hyperactive bowel sounds, high blood pressure, fever, and then you can even go into shock if it's too severe. I didn't learn this until, you know, for legal reasons, this is a joke, but I was in Colorado, so it doesn't matter. When I was in Colorado, I took some of those like little THC gummies and I was like, oh yeah. And then I was literally like super, super anxious and I hated it. I was like, I am thinking way too much. Like there's too much happening. I just want to go to bed. Like I'm anxious. I'm sweating. I really hate this. Like just feeling super like high strung. Yeah, that's because I'm on Lexapro, which is an SSRI, and probably, you know, they don't mix well. They don't mix well at all. So that's another thing, like look up how, if you are on medications, look up how that's going to react to other things that you're taking. So if you are on a medication and then you decide you want to smoke weed or something, probably look up how that's going to affect it, because if you're on Lexapro, it's not super great. It kind of really sucked. Obviously that's my experience and some people are gonna have different experiences, but that was mine. So just be aware of that, that serotonin syndrome is a thing and it can happen. So lastly, I'm gonna talk about schizophrenia. This is a
smell.
My gosh.
Sorry about that,
Gabby. So, schizophrenia is a severe mental disorder that presents as psychosis with paranoia and delusions that may be auditory, visual, or both. While the cause of schizophrenia is not completely understood, it is agreed that there are genetic, biochemical, structural, nutritional, and environmental factors at play. Pharmacotherapy practices used to treat schizophrenia include the use of both dopamine-blocking, antipsychotic medication, antidepressants, and tranquilizers. Other treatments include individual therapy, social skills training, family therapy, and vocational rehab. So some side effects of antipsychotics include dry mouth, constipation, and increased appetite. As far as the medical nutrition therapy goes for schizophrenia, it appears to be associated with an altered metabolism. So weight management program may be beneficial to those taking medication. Other practices are going to include caution against grapefruit because grapefruit just does not mix well with medication. I don't know why anyone would eat grapefruit in the first place. Like, I think it's disgusting, but it doesn't work well with a lot of medications. Also, you might want to do a trial of both gluten-free and dairy-free to see if either of those have an effect on the schizophrenia. Obviously, weight management, diet assessment of fat intake, relevant mineral status as possibility of excess plasma copper and low plasma selenium, and relevant vitamin status of MTFHR and folic acid intake. So there isn't a ton with schizophrenia other than the weight management being the biggest one, but there are a few things that, you know, we can try as dietitians to help with patients with schizophrenia. So very last thing, a few drug-nutrient interactions that I had to note. So with SSRIs, you want to be supplementing folate. With antipsychotics, you want to supplement either with a multivitamin or a B-complex or both, because B vitamin, it's water soluble. You're not going to store it. And then also avoid, oh gosh, echinacea, evening primrose, golden seal, glycine, ginkgo biloba, and St. John's wort. They're just not going to mix well. And then lastly, if you're benzodiazepines, you want to supplement calcium and avoid kava. That's all I have as far as the mental health and your diet. So obviously there are a few things that you can do as far as those are concerned. But my biggest takeaway from this is just that you want to be eating a healthy, balanced diet that is high in antioxidants and omega-3 fatty acids. Like, fish oil is honestly really good for you, especially if you're not consuming a lot of seafood to begin with. And I mean, I'm about to try it out, so in a few weeks, I guess I'll let you know how it's going if I see a notable difference. Really get your fruits and vegetables in for those antioxidants and phytochemicals, and just be aware of, you know, what foods may be causing inflammation in your body, what foods may be leading to stress on your body, and then leading to anxiety, like symptoms and behaviors, anything like that. That's all I have for this week. I hope you all have a good week.